Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio. I'm your host, AJ McLean, with my beautiful co-host, Cheryl Sherbear Burke, and the Rivian man himself, Mr. Rene Rivian Elizondo.
That's it. My new name. Hey, before we jump in, I want to say something. We took a break right now, right? AJ's made lunch for his daughter during the break. Okay, that's the kind of guy he is. He's over there like freaking making her lunch in between. So
you got to do what you got to do. I mean, that's it though, bro.
You know, love it. You're down to earth.
Well, look, mommy's not here. Mommy's with Lyric, so I got to hold down the fort as well as do a podcast.
Yeah.
Do interviews. You know, I love it. It's yeah. I'm excited about today's episode. This subject of eating disorder, is kind of near and dear and close to my chest. She may or may not kill me for saying anything, but you don't have to say who it is. No, but somebody very, very close to me has now joined a program, which is OA, and actually struggled with ED when she was younger. My first stint in rehab ever, my first roommate in rehab, a guy was in there for anorexia, and I was blown away because I was younger then. I was kind of numb to the whole thing, and I thought, oh, anorexia bulimia is only affecting women, not mm-hmm. men. I had no idea.
Yeah, same.
And since then, I've been schooled, and I've learned that is not the case. So I'm excited to have our guest on today. She is a life coach, and she has been dealing with the world of ED for quite some time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Amy Udis. Welcome,
Hi,
Amy.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you.
My name is AJ.
Me.
AJ McLean.
Yeah. I know you, AJ.
It's just I'm trying to be formal, informal. You know.
Yeah.
And my beautiful co-host Cheryl Burke.
Hello.
Hi,
thank you
Cheryl.
For being here. Hi.
Yeah, and thank you.
My esteemed colleague, Rene Elizondo.
Welcome.
Hi,
welcome.
Rene.
Hi. We're so
really
glad
nice
you're
to
on.
Meet you all. Yeah. Thank
yes,
you for
likewise.
Having me.
So I'm just going to dive right in, Amy.
Yes.
First and foremost, we have something somewhat in common involuntarily. Mm-hmm. My mom is a life coach.
Awesome.
She has been doing that for, I want to say close to almost 15 years now. She was really inspired after my first stint in rehab. I've mm-hmm. been three times, and I don't plan on going back. I plan on staying sober. That's my goal.
Love
but
it.
She was inspired, and she decided that she wanted to do her part and to give back to the community of addicts of all walks of life.
Yep.
So my first question: what drew you to specifically the world of eating disorders, ED, for anyone that doesn't know your backstory, tell
yeah.
us.
Yeah. Yes, I did not choose anorexia. Anorexia chose us. I have a daughter who is now 17. She turned 17 last month. And right when she turned 13, it gripped her really hard and really fast. So, it started with, she took a CrossFit class that was geared towards 12-year-old girls, but they had a contest where it was, let's not eat sugar for the week. And so from there, it was a springboard to, if I'm not going to eat candy, then I'm not going to have cookies. No cookies equals no muffins, no muffins equal no bread. Mm-hmm. And within a matter of a few short months, she had lost a significant amount of weight, had developed an obsession with exercising, was like, lying to me, lying to her dad, getting up in the middle of the night. And this is my, little baby.
Yeah.
So we took her in to get assessed for an eating disorder when she, you know, it was the week before she started eighth grade. It was supposed to be a 4-hour assessment. 20 minutes in, the doctor came and talked to my ex-husband and I and said, her heart rate is so low, it could kill her. And we're admitting her to the hospital immediately. You know, we didn't go home. So she was actually diagnosed as an anorexic after having been in the hospital for, you know, 4 or 5 days already. And it has been quite a ride ever since. So
what are the trigger signs, I guess, for other parents that also have, you know, daughters around, whether it be the same age or just friends, that how do you know when someone has an eating disorder or is struggling through anorexia?
I definitely want to make sure that I'm not a doctor or an expert, mm-hmm. but you know, my experience and what I told Avery from the very beginning, and she's okay with me being here. So she's okay with me, you know, and she's doing very well, all things considered at this point. You know, the first thing that I said to her was, there's not a person alive, basically, that doesn't have a very complicated relationship with food and their bodies. You know, AJ, to your point, I heard you talking about a former roommate. There are a lot more boys impacted by eating disorders than one would think.
Yes.
But, you know, any sort of, especially for very young women and men, any sort of fixation on food and calories, I think is something that a family really needs to take a good look at, needs to be very aware with constant communication. Making sure that, you know, there's a fine line between wanting to be healthy for your body and developing an unhealthy fixation on things. You know, I kept telling her, I'm like, pizza is made for 13-year-olds. Like, this is
and 37-year-olds.
Food is for you.
And 43-year-olds.
And 58.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I have two girls, 8 and 4. A little bit of a different, you know, backstory, but, you know, it scared me enough, which is over the last year and a half, my oldest daughter, she's had a couple of moments where she choked, and it terrified her. Mm-hmm. And most recently, not even a week ago, it wasn't really a choke, but she was eating a cookie. And what I tried to explain to her about anything that's made of dough expands upon moisture. Mm-hmm. So when you eat a cupcake, if you're eating cookies, you know, if you take too big of a bite and then you drink water to wash it down, it's going to expand and it's going to be a bit of a challenge. So it essentially a little bit of the cookie got stuck on the roof of her mouth. It didn't actually go in her throat and get lodged, but it scared her. For the next 5 days, she didn't eat. She dropped almost 4 pounds. Mm. She's 8. Since then, we've been on the uprise. She's back to eating. Things are looking good. She makes it a point. I think it's adorable, and I think it's endearing when I'm out at the studio or I'm somewhere else, and she'll send me a video of like her finished bowl of food. She's excited to show me, and I think it's amazing. Yeah. But at the same time, it scared me. And I even called Renee. I was like, dude, should I be worried? Because, you know, especially younger girls in dance, you know, competitive dance, you know, modeling, all of these things, there's this stigma that comes along with it, you know, to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids are off of social media. They don't look at what is the standard, quote unquote, of what a young girl should look like. We don't put that out in our, you know, household. Yeah. It's like, if you're curvy, if you're skinny, that's how the good Lord made you. That's how you are. Be comfortable with who you are.
But your girls are dancers as well, right? So like they probably are around that environment, which is difficult.
I'm just curious because, you know, when you think of addiction and you think of the different categories, you know, whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, there is OA, Overeaters Anonymous. Mm-hmm. The term eating disorder, it kind of has a negative stigma sound to it.
Totally.
Because you hear the word disorder. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it should, you know, that maybe we should maybe approach it differently if, as far as the, you know, terminology, if our kids have an eating disorder, should we maybe call it something else so it doesn't scare them? Do you?
100%. Yeah, yeah. I mean, so many things just have come to mind for me, you know. We called Avery's eating disorder actually at the beginning. She is a huge Golden State Warriors fan, huge Steph Curry fan. And so we called her eating disorder LeBron because she said that nice. She hated LeBron James just as a sports thing, right? And yeah. And so she, her analogy was like, imagine like the biggest, like meanest man that I don't want in my room yelling at me about what to do. Like that's the right. voice, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a way to kind of separate the eating disorder from Avery. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I mean, I'm not exactly sure where eating disorder terminology is going, but I know like there's so many body positive communities, and you know, right. People are talking more about self-love and those kinds of things. Like, I don't think she's necessarily there yet as a 17-year-old, but mm-hmm. she definitely doesn't want to be marked as someone who has a disorder.
Right. Also, I mean, but, you know, but like, do you see this as something that is like, for example, like all three of us are sober. You know, I myself and Renee, we work a 12-step program daily because mm-hmm. we have to. That's just how it is for us to stay sober. Do you think, you know, whether it's anorexia or it's bulimia, any type of eating disorder, do you think it is a lifelong thing?
Is it everyday work?
You know, that you have to maintain yeah, to stay, I mean, you know, abstinent from the negative side of it, basically.
So far yeah. in her experience. Mm-hmm. And I would say even my experience as a woman, right? Like I have never been diagnosed with an eating disorder, but I have to have a conversation with myself around certain foods at certain times. It's very, I think, it, I don't know. I just think it's part of being, certainly part of being a yeah. woman, probably part yeah. of being a human.
Totally. I can relate.
Yeah. There's a voice in your head at all times. And, yeah. you know, and it was interesting when Avery was first diagnosed, you know, she missed her first day of eighth grade. And my message to her was, you're not the first, unfortunately. You're not going to be the last. Mm-hmm. And we will have a lot of feelings about this, but shame is not going to be one of them. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to pretend that you went to horseback riding camp or whatever it is. Like, we're going to hit this with our community. And it was fascinating. There were a few women that dropped off of my radar completely. And over the last couple of years, I've seen them at the grocery store, at a gas station, and they've said, your story reminded me of when I was 14. It reminded me of when I was 16. You know, my family ignored this. So, you know, I had to struggle with it by myself or whatever it is. Yeah. There's so much more access to resources right now, but it's still.
And also just the entertainment industry in general, you know, mm-hmm. for me, at least, I was called out in public for being too fat for television. Mm-hmm. And with that, obviously, to say that I'm healed and that I'm so strong would be a lie. Like, I'm human, and every day I am constantly worried about if I've gained a couple pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm on Dancing with the Stars, so like we're half naked on that show dancing yeah. and in skimpy costumes, and then to be called out and in magazines too fat for TV type thing, or too fat to be an athlete. It's constant, and I think I definitely do have an unhealthy relationship with food for sure. You know, there's times where like I just will stay busy so that I maybe don't eat as much. Or like I used to be obsessed with weighing myself. I used to travel with a scale. It got to the point where now like I just don't weigh myself at all because I know mm-hmm. I'll get really fixated on it. But yeah, I think just being a dancer, doing ballet, for instance, I did ballet from 4 to 11. My hips grew out of this pink tights. And so I switched to ballroom. Yeah. But like just to have the stigma that comes around, that comes with dance in general, right? Having to be lean and long, and I'm not, yep. I'm naturally curvy and I'm short. And it's not really maybe what the ballet world is used to. But as far as I'm concerned, the reason why I left was because of that. Like I just felt like I didn't fit in. So
good things come in small packages, Cher. And
Cheryl.
You're all good on that end.
Cheryl. Yeah.
But and like to be called out in public, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, honestly, I hear you. So difficult. And, you know, my child has not had that experience because she hasn't been on that type of stage, but that's what her brain was telling her too. Right. So, you know, I my heart goes out to you in terms of the added pressure of having a bunch of jackass writers who don't know you
right.
putting that kind of, you yeah. know.
But it helps to have these conversations, you know, just so that you feel like you're not alone, regardless of the age or the gender, it doesn't matter.
Cheryl, first, I love you, Cheryl, for being so open, honestly.
Yeah, I do like, too, thank you.
Every time we do a podcast, it's like I become more and more fond of you. So thank you for your openness. Honestly, these are things that could be difficult to talk about. You know, I wanted to ask, like, first, Amy, you know, as a parent, sorry you had to go through that, because there's no, I watched my parents struggle with my addiction and my brother's addiction, right? And there's very similar. I've been to rehab a few times, and there were always people there with eating disorder. And I realized we're both kind of dealing with the same stuff, right? It's like low self-esteem, what others think of us. My question to you is, having gone through this, was there other attempts to talk to her where she sort of say, "You guys are making a big deal out of nothing." Was she?
Oh yeah.
Right. So
yeah, because I've got this under control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys
that
are making
combative, sensibility. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and for me,
yeah.
For me as an addict, alcoholic, same thing. Someone would say, "Hey, you might be drinking a little too much." And it's like, "Oh, come on. It's a free country. Yeah. It's a free country. I'm not hurting anybody." That's where we default to, right? Mm-hmm. And what I understand is, like, for me, it was impossible to get sober until I finally took a good look and admitted, wow, things are not good. And with anorexic, I believe, don't they, maybe not everyone, but they see themselves differently, right? You could say, "Oh my God, you look beautiful." And what they see in the mirror, I think they call it body dysmorphia, right?
Body dysmorphia,
What they see is not what we see.
Correct. Right?
So was there a tipping point? Was there a day, a specific moment where you guys just said, "We got to do something about this"?
Well, I mean, her hospitalization was one.
What led to the hospitalization?
So she had dropped a significant amount of weight, and she wasn't herself anymore. It was like there was a demon inside of her. You know, I'm sure that your family experienced, my 13-year-old threw me up against a wall over pasta, you know, and she's the sweetest kid on the planet. And I just knew like there was a sickness going on there. And I remember that night she said, "You just seem so angry. You seem so angry at me." And I said, "I am furious that this has been handed to you, and I am furious that I can't take it for you, but I can't." And so, you know, in terms of getting her the support she needed, she just wasn't physically well enough. She was in residential treatment twice. She's been hospitalized 4 or 5 times, you know, with a feeding tube. We've been out of that piece of her progress for the last like year and a half or so. And just over the past, I think maturity is part of it. I think COVID for our family was a silver lining because I got to feed her all day long. She wasn't at school anymore. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at work anymore. So I got to like watch her brain become healthy enough to wrap itself around like, these aren't the best choices for me. And now she's, you know, nearly done with her junior year, and she's driving, she's got a job, she's had a couple of dates. That's awesome. And I think, you know, she finally was like, "I don't want to lead with this anymore. I don't want to be the girl who was sick." You know,
are there?
Sorry, go ahead. Because a lot of people then, you know, I mean, look, I can say that I completely relate, you know, and I know that Renee can back me up on this because he's known me for over 20 years and I've been battling my own shit for over 20 years. And literally the pandemic saved me because, mm-hmm. you know, I should be or should have been back on tour, back on the road, where usually, you know, I would use touring as my scapegoat where, well, I'm not at home. I'm not around anybody mm-hmm. that, you know, I can do whatever the hell I want as long as I don't get caught. And yet my wife would know within the first five syllables out of my mouth on the phone if I had been drinking. Yep. And yet, you know, same with when I call Renee. And it's like, you know, but I was oblivious to this because I was knee deep in it. But being able to focus on myself and really focus on my recovery for the last 16 months that I've been sober, it's been, again, like you said, it's been that silver lining to be able to be home with your daughter, focus, and, you know, be that support group. Mm-hmm. You know, a question for you about, you know, because look, obviously there is on the spectrum of what people know in public, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know, there's anorexia and there's bulimia. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the two sides of the coin. Do you think that there is, obviously it still stems from the same thing, that body dysmorphia, that feeling less than, or whatever, mm-hmm. Low self-esteem, whatever it is, outside influence. Do you think between the two of them that there is one kind of outweighs the other, or that they are kind of parallel? They're just different, you know, forms of...
Are there different levels, you mean?
Just different forms of the same thing. Yeah. One is not eating and one is eating and binging and purging. I mean, that is really... Which essentially, it's kind of the same thing, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You're not eating at all.
You're hurting yourself, you know, basically.
Yes.
Psychologically, from what I understand, anorexia is based more on perfectionism, control, like those kinds of things, where bulimia is more often recognized as part of some sort of self-loathing. Like, I am going to punish myself now. Like, I did this and it made me feel good and that I didn't deserve that. So now I will feel bad.
So to be anorexic, like, do you have to look anorexic, or is it a disease?
It's a disease.
Yeah. Like, I mean, someone could be starving themselves and you may not see that from the outside, mm-hmm. but you would still be considered anorexic. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So in the world of AA and NA and CA and CODA and sex, love, and relationship addiction, there is OA, which is Overeaters Anonymous.
Right.
Now, is there something for
community,
the anorexic support and the bulimic support group? Because obviously OA, I mean, it's still a form of an eating disorder because you mm-hmm. are using food as a coping mechanism. You know, they basically go through the same 12-step program that, you know, myself and Renee have been through, or I'm still going through, and you just replace alcohol with food. But is there, what types of support groups are there that you've seen for the eating disorder world, or is
there? Yeah. Do you recommend?
Well, I don't know for the adult world, and I frankly hope not to find out much about what comes on for people with eating disorders. I try to be grateful for everything that has happened in our lives, and one thing I do have gratitude for, unfortunately, this affected our family. Fortunately, it gave us a really long runway to get her healthy. So, you know, she won't be an adult for another year, and so that means that we as a family have another year of just like loving her up and getting her whatever support we need, we can get to her. But in terms of her teenage peers, like, thank God for Snapchat and text groups. And because everywhere along the way, she's picked up other kids who all want to be well and, you know, have like their own little Snapchat support groups, et cetera. I get a little nervous because they're teenagers and I'm like, where's this conversation going to veer to? But she also, you know, she sees a dietitian once every 2 weeks, a therapist every week, and they have group also. So
oh, cool.
you know, Zoom, you can Zoom in from wherever. You can Zoom in if you haven't been in a year and you just feel like you need a little extra support. Like,
and you are really who you hang out with, right? Like, it's important to have that support
system.
Know?
I like what you said about, sorry, really, really quick, Cher Bear. I like that you said what you said about the social media aspect of things, because that would be the first thing that would scare me if my kids were going through it. Because again, social media, you know, a lot of kids, like, they base their existence on the people they follow, what they look like, how they eat, how they drink, how they dress, what they say. But there is the other side of social media, like you just said, which is, you know, being able to find people that you can relate to that are going through the same thing, and you form your own little group. I mean, we myself and Renee found a guy who's on TikTok who goes by Viking Tower, who has a child who is transgender. And so, you know, and that being said, was able to reach out to other people in the LGBTQ community. Yeah. And then we had him on the show to help promote equality and to show that we are a huge support for that community. So again, there is a good side to social media in retrospect, you know, based on what you're saying, which is a good thing. So go ahead.
If you have a friend, if you have like a friend or like a coworker who you know is bulimic or anorexic, how would you do, or do you even approach that person?
Every time. And I mean, my daughter has gone through that experience of just, you know, we notice if someone is pushing that food around a plate or seems to have dropped weight or seems to be under the weather or what have you. I feel like it's part of my job to give back to the people that did it for us. So, you know, there were teachers that were concerned about her and, her friends, you know, four of her seventh grade friends went to the vice principal and said, our friend is throwing her food away every day and we don't know what to do. And it makes us scared.
Those are good friends.
How about from adult to adult? Like, what if I had a friend that was showing signs? What would I do?
I would couch it as a coach. I would couch it as, I want to ask you a couple of questions. And this is just coming from my own experience and my own thoughts. And I'm certainly not trying to put anything on you, but I want you to know this is what I'm observing and I'm here, you know?
Okay.
Like that person, it's their own journey. And I mean, my daughter lied and lied and lied and is ashamed of that at this point, but she was only ready to talk about it when she was ready to talk about it.
That's it. Right. Yes. You know, like I've said, I've been to rehab a bunch of times and there were a lot of dual diagnosis rehabs where people were eating disorders, depression, bipolarity. And for me, I feel like my hat's off, first of all, to your daughter. I'm glad she's doing well. Mm-hmm.
The one
thing that I would hear, it's like, I stay away from drugs and alcohol. I don't put myself in places, right, where there's drugs or alcohol. But someone with an eating disorder has to face their demons three times a day, right?
Six.
Six times, right? For us, it would be like hanging out in a barber shop and not get our hair cut. You know what I mean?
It's like a bar and not drink.
Being surrounded by it. So the challenges that must come with that. And I'm just glad that she has a community, because I know for myself, if I tried to stay sober on my own, I wouldn't be sober today, right? Yeah. It's being around like-minded individuals and we look at each other. Sometimes we don't need to say anything. We look at each other, understand each other, and we also get to share our crazy thoughts with each other. And like, oh, I had the same thought. You feel less alone, right? Because disorders and diseases of these nature, I'll speak about alcoholism. It's been said that alcoholism is a disease of loneliness, right? Mm-hmm. Where you feel so separate from the world. You feel you don't belong. All these things, you know? And so I don't have a question other than I'm so glad your daughter's doing well. I do believe it's a very difficult thing to, you know, face and then overcome one day at a time. That's all we can do, right? Just take it one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Thank you. And I think it's a combination. It's probably your experience too, of she has her support groups where she needs them. And then she's also got a couple of friends who have never wrestled with eating disorders who are able, and in her experience, which has been nice, a couple of them are really good guy friends. So, you know, she's got these dudes that are like, eat the ice cream, let's go. Right. Oh, and, yeah. And it's just a different vibe for her. You know, it's, she knows that, that it's like done out of love and they're, you know, just these like right. silly high school dudes that are supporting her, but without mm-hmm. putting too much of a spotlight on her.
And not enabling her, right?
Yeah, yes,
not
exactly. enabling yeah.
her. Not
enabling.
Not saying, oh, you don't want the ice cream, yeah. don't eat the ice cream. They
Do
know
you think it also matters like what you're watching on TV and like your extracurricular activities after school?
So unfortunately, sports are out for her. Okay. It just was, it was just too much. But okay. she does Great. Yoga with me.
Great.
And now she's on like the newspaper staff, and now I'm like, fine, you can get on the Peloton, and you know, but I'm watching. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely. And I think for her, she has a job. So, you know, a lot of her friends are doing athletics, and she's, you know, kicking butt at this cute little hardware store that has an amazing gift shop, and you know, she's like learning other things, and yeah. it's taking up her time. So,
a question I have. So, like I shared with you earlier, my mom's a life coach. You know, back when she started life coaching, I was still kind of up and down, on again, off again, sober, not sober. And one of the biggest issues for me, which we have since resolved, mm-hmm. was, you know, when she would call me. And we would have a conversation if I wasn't doing great. Are you talking to me as a life coach or are you talking to me as my mom? Because uh-huh. there's a real fine gray area there. And I, you know, I could tell when it was the life coach coming out, and then I could tell when it was my mom. Has it been a challenge for you to separate the two, or has it just been straight up mom mode?
Straight
Since
up
this
mom
whole
mode.
Thing started
for Good. Sure yeah yeah like sometimes hysterical mom but because you know, no, it's I mean, just yeah. like you're terrified and yeah. and you feel helpless and nobody told me, you know. And I put something on my Instagram a couple of months ago. It was, you know, little 6 month old her in a bathtub and me smiling, and I'm like, I would have never known what was going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no manual with kids, so I don't think she would ever accuse me of having attempted to coach her through any of this. Yeah.
No, so, which then leads me to my next question. First of all, how long have you been doing the life coaching, and what attracted you to that line of, you know, work? Was it your daughter, or was it just something even before then that
yeah.
you were just, yeah. Like what?
You were also a matchmaker, right? At one time.
I was a yes. matchmaker for a little bit. Yeah.
okay.
But and my day job, I'm a recruiter. I head up recruiting for a tech startup in San Francisco that does bathroom remodeling. Mm-hmm. But I'm attracted to coaching, and I wanted to fold that into my life because I really like talking to people. And what I love about coaching is that the fundamentals of being a coach rather than being a therapist is that you know that whomever you're talking to has all of their own answers, and you're just kind of here as a vessel to help
mm-hmm. right.
formulate the right questions to get to where that person needs to be.
How about,
and you have like a plethora of clients of all walks of life, I'm assuming, right? Like
mainly other mothers.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Actually,
I mean,
mothers need you.
Small client list right now. I have hired 170 people over the last 11 months for my job. And so coaching has taken a back burner, but my plan is that it will be a lot more in the forefront.
Thank God for you, because I think that's the hard part, especially for mothers, is to have that relationship with their daughters. I know that, you know, my mom was very, and still is very obsessed about her body and weight and always on diets. And I remember when this came out, her intention was all great, but she did like put me on the South Beach diet. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. she just like, but that was her showing love, and it wasn't necessarily telling me that I am overweight, but it was just her being worried. And I wish I would have known that. I've been in intense therapy, which is the reason why I'm not in I mean, it's not the reason, but like it's part of the reason why I'm not in the 12-step program, but I'm mm-hmm. like, I've been in consistent therapy for so many years. And I just remember having such a big problem with that. Cause I was like, mom, does my mom think I'm fat, you know, like putting me on a diet? And to have someone like you around, I wish you were around back then. You probably were, I just didn't know you. I think it helps to have that open communication. I think that is so important.
No,
I have two questions.
Sorry, really quick, just to piggyback what you said, Cheryl, because I just want a lot of parents to hear this, especially, is because I know my wife and I now do it, in my opinion, the right way. We weren't for a while, which is, you know, our kids are sponges. They absorb every bit of information that they hear, especially from mom and dad, mm-hmm. who they are supposed to admire and look up to. And so, you know, my wife, like I said, grew up with body issues and is now taking the initiative, and she's working on herself to make herself feel better about herself. And I've even dealt with body dysmorphia as well. So back a few months, even a year ago, you know, we would always be talking in the kitchen candidly about, oh, so I'm down 5 pounds this week. Okay, good. You know, I got it. And then next thing you know, like I'm talking about being on a diet, even though I know in my mind what that means. It just means don't eat crap. It means eat healthy things, like eat your vegetables and eat your protein and this, that, and the other. But then all of a sudden I started noticing my kids. Well, I'm not going to have that, daddy. I'm on a diet too. And it's like, oh crap. No. You're eight. Yeah. No diet. No. So
exactly.
Again, stress that to all the parents out there to just be cautious of you say around your kids, because again, you're a huge influence on your children.
Absolutely. So.
I had some guilt because, you know, her dad and I had split up, and I've never been a dieter, but I would do like a 3-day cleanse every now and then, or, you know, whatever. And so I definitely felt like it was partly just her watching me, or did we stress her because our marriage didn't work out or what have you. And we ended up having a therapy session, you know, probably 2 years ago. And she said, when I think about it, it's always been there. It's something that I just know that I would have had to deal with no matter what, like whether you and daddy were married or not, et cetera, which was a really nice gift for me. I've lost a lot of sleep over the last 4 years. So, you know, just to be able to get to the point where I could ask her that question rather than beating myself up every night was helpful.
Along the same lines of you said earlier in the podcast, you said that you didn't choose it. It chose you, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I'm sure, you know, like you're an awesome parent. You must have had to suddenly start learning about stuff you never thought you'd have to learn about. That said, you also said you're not the first and you won't be the last. And unfortunately, we know right now as we speak, there's a lot of parents dealing with it right now. Mm-hmm. Along the way in your journey, what could you tell parents? What are the do's and don'ts? Like, what did you do that you later on found out you shouldn't have done? Or if anything, and what were the things maybe people, while you were learning about it, that they said, this is the way you approach someone with anorexia?
Yeah. Great question. I would say that the two things that I feel like I did right was, one, trying to take that shame piece away from her. She's 100%. Very upfront about what she's been through with people. And also, we hit it really hard as soon as we knew, you know, one of our first therapists said, and if it's not eradicated, this is whack-a-mole. And if it's not eradicated completely, it's not gone. And so that's why I still portion out her snacks. I still like drop into her work and make sure that she's had lunch, those kinds of things. So that's my main advice when I get on the phone with parents who I've never met before.
They're
is just
active.
Yeah. Like get into it, make your kid uncomfortable, like get to a dietitian. It's way more important for them to be pissed off at you now than, you know, in a hole when they're 21 and you have no control anymore.
Exactly.
And what not
to do. I could probably think of a million things that I shouldn't have done, but,
Well, I can give you an example. Like for us, we're taught with newcomers, we can't chase them around, right? Uh-huh. We can't chase them around. Sometimes it's harder. Sounds like this is a little different, what you're saying. So there are do's and don'ts. And what would you strongly suggest that a parent not do?
So I would say, especially at first, if she was irrational and angry, I was angry back. And that is not ever going to get you anywhere.
That's a good one.
Right.
Yeah. It's fighting with someone who, it's probably fighting with someone who is on a substance, right?
Yes. Like, yes.
They're not really there. So,
exactly.
I certainly could have handled certain situations better from that standpoint. And that was just straight up terror. Like, what is happening? And so,
it's your daughter. It's your daughter, and you feel like she's drowning, right? You feel like she's drowning. So that's a really good thing. What you just said is avoiding confrontation, because there is no upside to it, right? It just leads to an argument.
It's going to go in circles and circles and
just
circles.
Just be a good listener, would you say?
Yeah. Nothing's going to be accomplished.
Take a breath. Realize the moment's going to pass. Like, you're going to get the calories into this child somehow. Like, that last bite of pasta doesn't have to be the hill that you die on, you know?
Oh, right.
Yeah. So
I have a question. This is an interesting little tidbit that our amazing producers let us in on, which is, you know, Demi Lovato, obviously, you know, a lot of people know about her struggles with addiction as well as with an eating disorder. You know, and she is, they're in the process of doing a show, a TV show called Hungry, which, or doing a pilot for this show called Hungry, NBC. Which follows a bunch of people, that have food issues, like in this food issue support group. You know, do you think something like this is a good idea? Or do you think this is just going to continue to add to the stigma that is already attached to the term eating disorder? I mean, in your mom opinion and in your professional opinion, what do you think?
Would you let your daughter watch that?
Yeah.
Not until I watch it.
Right.
I would watch it first. But I do think that with someone young and authentic like Demi Lovato appears to be, I have high hopes that it's going to provide comfort to people who have had issues with food. Like, ideally with somebody like her at the helm, it's going to be able to explore the issue in a way that makes people feel like, oh, someone has been there. Someone understands me. So that's what I would hope for. And I would assume that she's not going to let it become, you know, a barrage of eating disorder jokes or what have you. Cheryl, you asked a couple minutes ago, you know, do you think like what people are watching is impactful? I mean, absolutely. One of my very favorite movies is First Wives Club with, you know, Goldie Hawn.
And that movie.
Right. But remember there's one line where Bette Midler says to Sarah Jessica Parker, like, oh, your anorexia is working out well. And I wouldn't let Avery watch that movie until like 6 months ago, because I was so scared that that one line was going to just put her back, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, okay, there's two instances where they talk about body image. Once here, she's like, it's okay. I'm okay.
Yeah. But you're right though, because like people look up to Sarah Jessica Parker and they're like, she's drop dead gorgeous. And do I have to look like that to be where she is and be successful? And absolutely. I mean, I watched Pretty Woman when I was a little girl, which was probably not appropriate, but still, like, you just want to be that person when you're young. And it really is an influence.
You know what? Yeah. It goes back to what you said earlier. And Cheryl, you've brought this up before, which is perfectionism sounds like a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't perfectionism sound like
you're productive?
Oh, I want to hire that person
because
it's deadly. It is deadly. And we're living in a culture, a society right now where everything's photoshopped, everything's filtered, every background is selected.
I'm guilty of it, you guys. I filter myself all the time. And I also, you know, it's pretty bad.
And you know, the truth is, right? The truth is this has been going on for a long time, whether it's high fashion, what the models are, they're tall and they're this and that. And it's being told that this is what perfection is. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a perfectionist,
size zero.
The truth is there yep. is no perfection, mm-hmm. right? No. Let's get that out of the way. There is no perfection, but these young kids that are involved in social media, that are watching it, television shows, all these different TikToks, it really is promoting a falsehood, right? A falsehood 100%. That nobody can yeah. actually attain. Nobody can get to these places. And then the kids, not just the kids that are viewing it, the kids that are doing it are afraid to go in public because they don't look the way their image, right. their doctored yeah. image looks, you know?
Yeah.
I
do think yep. social media is something we're all going to have to keep a really strong mm-hmm. eye on with our kids, sure. especially.
This is why I stopped. I don't even look at it anymore. No, I can't.
I totally yeah. agree. But then, you know, on the upside, you've got people like Ashley Graham and people like Lizzo yes. that are
we
like,
need more
yo,
of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need more of that. You know, mm-hmm. now there is, you know, Fashion Week in Paris now has a runway show yeah. filled with plus size women.
Even and it's online, like you look showing, shop online yes. and they're way better about it.
Exactly.
Than they
it's
used
like,
to,
you know, yeah. we, yes, I think we need more outspoken women and men, both
yeah.
that are not the cookie cutter Barbie different doll sizes, picture yeah. perfect, you know, mm-hmm. stigma that that's what you're supposed to look like. You can go as far back to Jane Mansfield and Marilyn Monroe and yep. Betty Page. They were not like twigs per se. They were voluptuous, curvy women, and they were what back then what the ideal woman was to look like.
Absolutely.
Somewhere along the way, you know, it shifted to
what,
you know,
I think what you just said, AJ, yep. the ideal, there is no ideal. That's, I think, what needs to mm-hmm. like be yeah. put out there constantly. There is no ideal, you know, there right. is no like, okay, here's ideal. And if you move away from that, you better work on yourself.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Completely.
There's a, I forget which Peloton instructor it is, but there's a Peloton instructor that says you can be a work in progress and a masterpiece at the same time. And I was like, yes. I'm yes. like, get in here, kids.
Yes.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. It's true. It's very true. You
thank
know,
you so much.
Yeah. Is just before we let you go, is there anything that you want to say to, you know, parents out there or to anyone that may be struggling with food issues yeah. of any kind?
Or may think that they are, know, but they can't
or,
admit
yeah,
it.
Or, yeah. Is there anything that you want to say before we let you go?
Yes. So you're not alone. And there's nothing wrong with you. It's part of our experience as humans. We all go through our own traumas. I personally, like I mentioned, I have had phone calls with people all over the country that I have never met, that I will never meet about this subject when it comes to themselves or their kids. So I personally am available if anybody would want to talk about themselves or a family member that they're concerned about. But just
how can
like any
get a hold of you.
I can give you a phone number or an email address.
Yeah, not right now.
Yeah.
Yes. Not on the air, but yes.
Or,
yeah. Social media. Yeah. What's your Instagram yeah. handle?
Yeah. I'm at amyamie.udice.
Got it. We'll add that in the description.
Yes.
That's a tongue twister and, right there.
Yeah. Oof. And if you all want to, Avery made a little video and I can send it to the producers if you guys would want to see just something she did for school about
of course.
Eating disorders.
Absolutely.
But I think mainly it's like you have one life. This cannot be good for you or your loved one if you think that there's somebody that's hurting and in trouble. And there's so many ways to get support. So I have some ideas and certainly would, you know, pass along the list to anyone who's hurting. And I do want to just take a second. I was having a really weepy, emotional day yesterday, and I was driving down the street talking to a friend at a stoplight, and I hear, "Mama," and it's my daughter standing, you know, downtown. We live in Marin County, California. And she's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. And she was holding a gigantic cookie standing on the street corner by herself. And I just thought, like, I've been thinking about meeting with all of you and just our journey. And so the fact that I got to see that visual was just incredibly gratifying. So
that's beautiful.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Keep doing great work. Seriously. Yes, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you all. Thank it was so you. Nice to meet you.
Nice
likewise
to meet you too.
And we are very, very glad that your daughter is doing much better. Yes. And
send her
continued success on the journey. And thank you so much.
Yep. Have a good
thank
day, y'all.
Thank you. Thanks, you. Amy. Cheers.
All right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to answer one of your amazing emails. So stay tuned. And we are back on Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio. As we have always said to you guys, we love, 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 love when you send us your emails with your questions for one of us, all of us. And again, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button and give us 5 stars. We love you for doing that. We really do. So we have an email from Veronica who says, my best friend, who is an alcoholic, has an 8-year-old daughter. He is separated from her mother and no longer sees her every day. He wants to be a good dad, is doing the best he can. I thought it might be time for him to talk to his daughter about what's going on with him, and maybe children's books would be a good place to start. There are several books for kids with an alcoholic parent. Have you had any experience with any of them?
Well, I had an alcoholic parent. Who has now passed. My father was an alcoholic. And I have to say, you know, my mom put me in therapy right away. So I've been in therapy since I was a little girl. As far as, you know, I think it's, I can't even imagine, you know, I guess having that conversation. I was so small. I was 2 years old at the time when my mom and dad separated. But my mom still made it very, I guess, clear that she wanted me to have a good relationship with my father. She never badmouthed my father, not once to me, which helped. Even the whole drinking problem, it was, you know, I asked questions, but, you know, she was basically just trying to stay as positive as possible, but then yet telling me at the same time that this is not good for you type thing.
Yeah, I mean,
I can only talk from personal experience. So,
I mean, look, I don't, you know, as far as books for kids with an alcoholic parent, I'm sure that there are plenty of books out mm-hmm. there, that might help a child somewhat better understand what their mom or dad is going through. But really at the end of the day, I think it's about communication. I think it's about sitting down with your child. And I know I've already, you know, to a certain degree of understanding, I've explained to both my daughters what an alcoholic is. I've explained to them that, you know, daddy cannot drink alcohol because daddy changes when he drinks alcohol. You know, sometimes daddy gets silly and funny, but sometimes daddy gets angry and sad. And I would much rather be the happy, silly, angry, sad, sober dad than the other alternative. So I think just, you know, having open communication with your kids, if you are suffering from the disease of alcoholism, or addiction of any kind is key. You know, obviously based on how old your kid is, you know, you may have to kind of finesse it a little bit, for them to really understand. But I'm sure that there are books out there for kids to read. Just like I've seen children's books now with same-sex parents that are in the book. So I'm sure that there's books out there where maybe, you know, one of the parents might be a a little sick and how the family works through it. So,
but there's nothing like direct communication, I think.
Yeah, nothing like direct communication for me.
Did the email say that it might be time for the dad to talk to the daughter?
He wants to be a good dad,
but is he in recovery or is he still drinking?
Well, it's just, no, she just says that, I thought it might be time for him to talk to his daughter about what's going on with him, and maybe children's books would be a good place to start. There are several books for kids with an alcoholic parent.
Yeah. Renee, I know what you're alluding to. Yeah,
I was going to say maybe he should get a book and stop drinking. I mean, if he wants to be a good dad. I don't mean to make light of it, but seriously, it's like getting her a book by the dad and he keeps drinking is not going to help a lot, other than the mom should tell the daughter, your dad is sick and he needs to get well. And hopefully at some point along the way, dad will wake up to the idea that alcohol is affecting his family, you know?
Yeah, and take responsibility. That's the best option, actually. I side with you, Renee. Yeah.
I completely agree.
And the truth is, I don't know a book.
I
don't know a children's book. I don't know how you would approach it through a book. I mean, I guess I could see how a book could be written. I just don't know of one, but I would
maybe
just
love
to.
Maybe you should write one.
Right.
Yeah.
I would just love to encourage the dad we're speaking of that, like, you can do this. You can stop.
Yeah. Veronica's best friend is the dad.
We know what it's like. Both AJ and I, have kids, and it's the most wonderful gift you could give your child is to be sober and present and not enslaved by drugs and alcohol.
100%. So, Veronica, thank you so much for your question. And again, anyone that wants to send us their questions and or comments, you can email us at PMU@iHeartRadio.com, capital PMU@iHeartRadio.com. So again, thank you guys. We want to thank our amazing guest, Amy, for coming on the show. And we wish her and her family the best of luck moving forward. And you guys out there listening, stay safe, stay happy, love yourself, love your neighbor. And we will see you guys next time on Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio.
Cheers.
Peace.
Follow Pretty Messed Up on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.